Hello and welcome to the lineup on the True Blue LA podcast channel. I like that you and I talked about how to present this, and I like that.
It's kind of, at some point it's probably going to be the True Blue LA podcast empire as part of the United States of America, brought to you by True Blue LA, et cetera, et cetera.
Like, you think we could
can we get naming rights on the country?
You know, the deficit gets low enough, probably. Yeah. Do you think we could buy? So I have a bunny ear. You know, they're not actually bunny ears, but an antenna. So I get over the air networks now. And I never knew that there's like weird sub channels of the main networks that you get if you do that.
Yeah,
which are the equivalent, I'm guessing, of what the UHF channel on Weird Al's movie is. Could we buy one of those? Do you think?
Without was it Wheel of Cheese or no Wheel of Fish? Wheel of Fish, yeah, and it's weird that like those channels are bizarre. One of my friends has an antenna. And yeah, like you'll have like, you know, NBC, right? Or Channel 4 out here in LA. But then there's like 4.1 and 4.2. Mm-hmm. And most of those are like basically.
It's the Andy Griffith Show 24/7.
Yeah, exactly. It's essentially, it's like MeTV in a way, like, which is sometimes awesome. Like,
I've been very much enjoying it. Fortune Fire repeats, a lot of bad criminal procedures. Man, we really got off track just because we want our own channel. It's going to happen. But before that, we should probably do an actual podcast where we're going to catch listeners up on your 100 plus win Dodgers. We're going to talk about who we think the most valuable player contributing to those 100 players are. And I'm curious to see if you think it's the same two player race that I think most people do, but we'll see who you pick, who I pick, who Fangraphs pick, who Baseball Reference picks. And then we've got some questions, Craig, all of that after this.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead. Take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So we recorded last week, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, time is a construct at this point.
The day after the Dodgers won the division, when we recorded,
and now they have won 103 games. A question I have for you: this is bearing normal, you know, they play how they play, and this is going to be the most wins Dodger team has ever won. Is this the best Dodger teams you've ever seen?
Yeah. I was I thought the 2017 team was really good. Well, my brain like defaults to like thinking of it like how set up they were for the playoffs when it's like pared down, but like they were also, you know, deep too. But like this offense is so much better than any Dodger team I've watched. And the pitching, like, it's weird because, like, you know, they don't have, like, Buehler's out, Gonsolin's out at the moment, like, but they've got, you know, they're overall, they're still really good. It's like a sum of their parts, like, yeah, it is. But, and it's also very weird. I still have a hard time processing, like, essentially winning at, like, a 70% pace. Like,
yeah.
They split a doubleheader Tuesday and they won the first game. And then after that win, they had a 701 winning percentage and they lost the nightcap. So it dropped below again, but like, that's ridiculous. Like, and that's following two full years where they won 106. And then they had a better winning percentage in the shortened season.
Yeah. That was the other team I was going to point to, that 2020 team. Up until the series with the Braves, just felt like they couldn't lose. Like, they're just so solid at executing what you're doing. You know, they didn't have Trey Turner or Freddie Freeman, but they did have, especially in the playoff, Corey Seager just on another level. And the pitching was just so, so wonderful. And oddly enough, that is kind of what faltered in the playoffs when they kind of tried to maybe get too cute with Gonsolin in May. And Gonsolin just really... kind of faltered there, but just what a solid team that was. But this, like you said, the offense is just so incredible to behold. It to the point where I feel like anytime I'm listening, whether it's Joe Davis and Oral or national broadcaster talk about it, like it's become so many cliches now, but it's just true on how non one dimensional they are, which is kind of unusual. I had gotten really used to they lose to left-handers. They're kind of in the mold of the 2-3 outcome exclusively, and that now they just seem to be able to do it all. It's really incredible to watch.
Yeah, they're very well-rounded. Like, and we'll talk about this in our MVP talk, but like the top three in the lineup is like ridiculous, like, and possibly historically great, like But yeah, it's just overall really good. Like you talked about, like, so last week, I will note when we recorded last week, the Dodgers were leading when we were recording, and then Craig Kimbrell gave up the walk-off home run after we were done. So it's not our fault. Since we last recorded, the Dodgers did win their 100th game of the season, and then obviously three more so far. And then they set a team record with 52 road wins. Oh, the 100 wins, by the way, was the fastest to 100 in Dodgers history, 144 games. The previous record was 147. They're also, since integration, so like 76 years now, only five teams, including the Dodgers this year, have gotten to 100 wins in 144 games. It's the 2001 Mariners, who won 116, the 98 Yankees, who won 114, and then Cleveland in 1954 and 1995. So that's it. Like, that's what they're up against. Like, so that's what they're doing. And then in the process over the weekend, they clinched a bye. They did this on Monday, clinched a bye into the NLDS. They are guaranteed a top two seed. I'm fairly certain they're going to end up the number one seed in the National League, and they'll probably still have the best record overall, because the Astros have been winning a lot too, but Dodgers still have a comfortable cushion over them. So they're going to be like, have home field advantage in like however long they last. So, but they did, clinching a bye into the NLDS gives them 5 days off after the end of the regular season. And that means they start on October 11th at Dodger Stadium. Rumor has it that a certain podcast duo will be in the ballpark together on October 11th at Dodger Stadium. Have you heard this rumor?
I was trying to think of a different podcast to do it could have been.
It's Jesus and Mero. They're going to reunite.
I went to this is a radio, not a podcast, but I went to Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla for some reason.
Oh God,
I have no idea why that, and not the place I want to be in. But
we have a lot of opinions.
You and I will both be there. I'm in town for a wedding the weekend before and a work conference the weekend after. And, I knew both of those were in October, but I couldn't remember the day. I'm like, oh, maybe it'll be like a regular season game. I can go to like Fan Appreciation Day or something like that, one of the Colorado games. And then I saw that it was later, and I was like, okay, hopefully they get this by, and then I don't have to worry. I have to like make plans based on the outcome of a wild card series. So grateful that they secured their bye and that I will be there. The tickets have bought. Thank you, Craig. As a season ticket holder, he helped out going with
questions of fame.
Although I will say I going with my brother and a few friends, one of whom is a Braves fan. So I'm really hoping for the Braves to win their division. That way, don't have to worry about bringing the enemy into Dodger Stadium.
But the Braves wouldn't be there.
Right. That's what I'm rooting for. Right. If they win the division, they wouldn't be at the.
If they don't win the division, they'll be the four seed. So they also wouldn't be at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, okay.
Because Dodgers play 3-6. So. Oh, no, they play 4-5. Right. I stand corrected. I was like, I couldn't.
No, because, that was a text message you and I had where I was, it was like, man, I want to play the 3-6 seed. give me St. Louis. You know, you never not, you know, all these teams are good. Baseball's weird. Anyone can win, yada, yada, yada. But still. That was a bigger concern when San Diego was really scary. You know, they just traded for Juan Soto, all of that. So I was like, oh man, them or the Braves, that sounds brutal.
Yeah. But I guess if there's a time to get the Braves, it would be after a wild card series where their pitching is not in order. And
on the flip side though, the time to get the Mets is really after a wild card series after they've burnt DeGrom and Scherzer. So,
yeah.
But yeah, we'll be there, and I'm really excited. I have very cheap seats, which I'm excited about because of all the changes Dodger Stadium. I'm excited to not feel as confined to my seats in my particular area and really kind of roam around the park for certainly before the game and probably during as well.
Yeah. You mentioned Fan Appreciation Day. It got me to thinking because I guess I didn't think about this, but you know how the instead of a 3-game series against the Rockies to end the season, it's now a 6-game series because they had to tack on from that first canceled week of the season. But so I looked, and actually Fan Appreciation Day is what would have been the last day of the season, Sunday, October 2nd. And then they have 3 more games.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, because I think it's, you know, it's because they already sort of set that up. But
it is kind of like, really, that's not a thing you can move?
Yeah,
it's not like it's this huge. Yeah, we've already booked the bands. And
yeah, and that's the thing. There's not, it's like, yeah. Like,
give away some stuff. And
those Delta flights aren't going to like expire like 3 days later or whatever. Like,
so which game is Hanser Alberto going to be the manager in then? Is it going to be the last day or the Fan Appreciation Day? They haven't done that in a while.
Oh, that was a Joe Torre thing, and they haven't really done that at all. Like, I'm trying to think. Did Mattingly may have done it?
I feel like Russ Martin did it. Did Justin Turner do it once? Is that's in my head? Maybe that's wrong though. Maybe just because he's so.
You might be right. I'm just blanking on it right now, but it doesn't seem like a thing that they've done.
No, but maybe if having, I mean, who more perfect than Hanser? He's done every other job. I saw that's that he true. Was doing play by play for ESPN.
Oh yeah, that was a good inning for him. That was fun. I will say the Dodgers do have The Monday game against the Rockies is Mookie Betts bobblehead, and then Tuesday is Justin Turner bobblehead. So there's a lot going on, even after Fan Appreciation Day. And then Wednesday, nothing. Just we're done. season's over. Regular season's over, etc. So,
Is this the longest gap between games, like mid-season? Like, maybe was there an All-Star break that was longer?
What do you mean?
They have 5 games off, right? Excuse me, 5 days off between games, Wednesday and the final game of the season, and then
But it's not terribly different, because usually
it's a day then.
It's a day. It used to be season ends, you know, Sunday, and then one of the division series opens Thursday, the other opens Friday. So it's either 3 days off or 4 days off for someone.
Mm-hmm.
This just happened to be 5. So, so I guess that is beneficial in a way where you can literally go to the end if, like, that's what you're fighting for, right? The Braves and the Mets, though, they play the weekend of the last weekend, but then they play like 3 more games after that. But like they're in a dogfight for the NL East, so that's going to be like a fun.
Yeah, and after going through that last season, I'm glad it's not it was fun in that you were very engaged, but it was exhausting caring about every single game and having as many mere results as they did.
It was also, I shouldn't pay attention to this as much, but it seemed like the tone of like the commentary around the team were like, oh man, Dodgers like couldn't get it done. They failed. They didn't beat the Giants. But then like, if you look back and they were like, 42-12 to end the season, and like what else are you gonna do, right? Like they lost their last game in San Francisco, right? And they lost by a game, but it's like I don't know what else they were supposed to do. Like people were complaining last year that they were 16-3 against the Diamondbacks or Rockies, I don't remember which one, and they're like, why didn't they win more? I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? I don't know. It was weird. So I didn't like that aspect of it. But that's also something easy to ignore if you let yourself do that. But So there hasn't been as much of that this year.
What there has been a lot of is good hitters in the Dodgers lineup
and pitchers. We don't limit ourselves here to solely pitchers and hitters. The last Dodger to, or no, never mind. I was going to say the last Dodger to win MVP was a pitcher, but that is incorrect. The last Dodger to win an MVP who will be on the team in 2023.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's that.
Wow. That's too bold. No, well, one bold and one, you know, prediction.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's that. Let's get into it. Let's say we have a very loose show this week, but let's talk about who is the Dodgers MVP in 2022.
So do you want to make any arguments for someone that's not Freddie Freeman or Mookie Betts? There are obviously a lot of other really good players, but to me, it really comes down to those two.
No, I think it's them. I pulled up before we started just to have like reference if we were like stuck on something, but like, so if you go by, you know, the baseball reference page, and it just lists like the top players, the players at the top, you know, in order of war. Tony Gonsolin's still the number one pitcher, despite not having pitched for the last like 4 weeks. 4.7 baseball reference war. Urias is behind him. And then Trey Turner is in between there after Mookie and Freddie. And then if you go by Fangraphs war, Baseball Reference has Mookie ahead in war. Not that war is the sole determinant, just pointing it out. And then Fangraphs has Freeman ahead in war. Both are 1 and 2. Trey Turner's third in both. Will Smith is 4th by Fangraphs. And then it goes Tyler Anderson, and then Kershaw, then Urias, and then Gonsolin. So, like, they kind of, I think, they have it in a little slightly different order, but those are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think they if I'm because I'm going off of two pages simultaneously here. Those are the top eight. I'm leaving off Gavin Lux, who has 3.0 WAR exactly in Fangraphs. So I think the top 10 is basically the same, right? Like, or mm-hmm. roughly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's basically like it's Mookie or Freddy, right? Like that's the talk.
And I do not know the particulars on the slight differences on how Fangraphs and Baseball Reference calculate their WAR, because I'm wondering if that can actually be a little illustrative of why they rank them different. Because I was thinking about this earlier, is like it feels like Freddie, how I had kind of viewed this from a very not unscientific standpoint, was like Freddie has just felt so gluish, butter and eggs, hits every, like when he slumps, it's not for very long, and they're not egregious slumps. Whereas Mookie, like the Dodgers, didn't have a bad start, but kind of like not up to his standard. And then it seems like since after the first three or so weeks, he's just been completely taken. He's just completely taken off.
No, but he even had like, he had a really strong May, like a ridiculous May. Like Paul Goldschmidt was like otherworldly. So like, it was like player of the month level.
Yeah, May, no, it was really just, it was just April that he was, and again, not bad.
No,
just,
but I was going to say he actually slumped after that. Like,
okay. Yeah.
And he got hurt. So like there was part of that. So yeah, I think it could be a style thing, right? Like, Mookie Betts is like, you know, setting the tone at the top. He leads the team in home runs. Like it's crazy that someone his like, relative small size, right? This is baseball player small, like has like the most power on the team. Like he's just, how does he do that? You know, that kind of a thing. And he's like better defensively for sure, you know, obviously. But like
I would say he's more important defensively.
Yeah,
in right field, that's a more premium position, but because Freddie is so good defensively at first. He's they're both great base runners. They both have 12 steals. Looking at this now.
And, I think Freeman was just thrown out like recently. Oh no, he's been thrown out three times now. Okay. He had a stretch there, I think, where I thought he was zero caught stealings, but maybe I was mixing that up. But
and I guess the last bit I kind of want to add on that is this was sort of a phrase that I think Joe Davis used a lot last year, and it to me it echoes this, is like when Mookie is good, the Dodgers are really good, and when he's kind of off, they're still good, but you can like, it seems like so many of the Dodgers really hot stretches came when Mookie was on fire, and to me that like narratively made him feel like, oh, he is the most valuable player, like that made that make that kind of rings to me, but saying it's not Freddie Freeman also just feels wrong to me.
Yeah. So I think too, so the game, okay, maybe not. I was just going to say the game that's on in the background while we're recording, it looked like the umpire just got hit in the beans either a foul ball or a ball. Yeah, I think it was a foul ball. But he did not react like someone who got hit in the beans. So it sure looked like it. I think Dave Roberts, like, you know, since 2020, he said it in 2020 a lot, but it was basically how Mookie goes, we go, or when Mookie goes, we go, or something like that. Right. And that's the thing. Like when he's on, like everything's engaged at that point, like you're sort of firing on all cylinders, that kind of a thing. And you could say like he does more things in general, not that it, you know, not that they're all of equal importance, but like the most well-rounded of the Dodgers and all that, I would argue. So it's a good question as to why, like I don't know the exact difference. They both use different defense, for Fangraphs and Baseball Reference for WAR, but I don't think that's all of it. I'm not totally sure. I'm looking just as a,
well, so, well, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, Okay, so I would, well, I don't know how Baseball Reference incorporates base running, but then like Mookie's ahead in that. So like, but in, it's weird because Mookie Betts in his WRC plus, which like incorporates base running and everything, is 146, whereas his OPS plus is 138, or this is entering Wednesday. And, you know, Freeman is fairly similar in both, 143 or 153 OPS plus, 158 WRC plus. So like, yeah, I can't say I know the difference. I don't know.
Oh, sort of, I want to give an honorable mention to Gavin Lux, just because he's felt, yeah. I use this term for Freddie, but also just this kind of, Gavin Lux, second in on base on the team. And it's just, especially at the end of the lineup, just being able to really nicely turn that lineup over when, during that, during his absence, when that, you know, the nine hole hitter actually kind of became a nine hole hitter, it just felt obvious, like, oh, a hole. Like, not all the time. Obviously, Trace Thompson and Joey Gallo have had some really good games, but there have been times like, ah, man, that you combine that with maybe one of the other regulars taking a day off, and all of a sudden you actually have what felt like a back end versus when everyone was healthy. And you look, you're like, Gavin Lux is the nine hole? How does that work? Yeah. That doesn't make sense, just given how good he is. But it was, especially when you have that top three of the lineup, it just was a really effective a place for him to be in.
Well, and that's the thing, like, you know, you could say all you want about like the Dodgers, right? They traded for Mookie Betts and then signed him to a 12-year deal. They signed Freddie Freeman when he sort of suddenly became available. And so, they're going to end up having the second highest payroll in the majors behind the Mets, and like right on the precipice of the highest luxury tax tier. So yes, they obviously have financial advantages, but Lux is a guy who sort of fits the mold of why they're so good for so long, is that they're cranking these guys out, right?
Will Smith as
like,
well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like they traded AJ Pollock you know, to get Craig Kimbrel for one, but also to clear a spot, like, so playing time for Gavin Lux, like, and they bet on him and they needed him to come through, and he absolutely did. Like, he's been great. I think I'm looking this up as we speak. He still leads the majors in triples with seven. when they started getting like absurdly good, it was when, 3 years in a row, they brought Jock Peterson in 15, Seager 16, Bellinger 17. Seager and Bellinger were better than Jock, but also Jock was really, really good. But like, just being able to just add these ready-made guys like into the lineup, and, you know, in their cheap years, as it were, like, so you can fund the higher expenditure type stuff and like keep the engine running and that sort of thing. And I think Lux definitely fits into that. And you know, he struggled. He was like one of the top prospects in baseball coming up, but it's not always linear. How a sort of baseball player ages and develops and all that. So sometimes you have to be patient, and they were, and he's really good. So yeah, I agree. I will say too, and if you want to give a notch in Mookie's belt, for him being hurt, not that he, I'm not saying that's a thing, but maybe him, when he broke his rib and missed some time, that openly exposed the Dodgers' glaring need for an extra outfielder, and then they went and got Trace Thompson. So, like, yeah, I give Betts full credit for Trace Thompson in a way. I don't know. Is that a stretch?
a little bit.
Yeah, okay, maybe a stretch. No, I think if we're going, honorable mentions might probably a strong term, but like, it's probably better than this. But like Trey Turner, like the other element of the big three. He's obviously been really, really good too, but just like probably a notch below those two. But interestingly, so in Fangraphs, or I think Buster only wrote about this over the weekend, the Dodgers were the Sunday night game in San Francisco for some reason against a Giants were on Sunday Night Baseball 2 weeks in a row in September in a lost year. Weird. I think Sarah Langs at MLB.com sort of found this stat, but there's never been a team with the 1, 2, and 3 in their lineup finish all in the top 10 in WAR. I believe she was using Fangraphs WAR. But so if you look, as we're recording Wednesday, Freeman is 4th. Mookie Betts is 8th, and Trey Turner's 11th. And he's like basically right on the precipice of the top 10 again. So just crazy to have those three guys at the top, right? And then Will Smith, obviously still really good at basically batting cleanup all year as the catcher and still doing well. Yeah, I guess, you know, if we just keep listening, guys, Will Smith too, like, obviously. Like, but then it would be remiss with the pitchers, right? Like, Tony Gonsolin is having, like, a insanely, like, special year. And then, like, you know, Tyler Anderson, not, like, going to be the MVP or anything, but leads the Dodgers in innings, has been essentially, like, the most reliable, one of the most reliable guys in the league. Julio Urias, like, had a brief sort of, I think, mini struggle, but has basically been lights out for, like, 3 months and is just – and we're basically going on 2 years of being, like, Cy Young consideration good. And like 2020 also was a shortened season, but he started all year and then obviously played a hybrid role in the postseason, but he's basically been the reliable starter they've hoped for for 3 seasons running now. And like, he's really good. He will get Cy Young votes this year, like higher up. He only tied for 7th last year, but it was also a very top heavy group. I think it's a little more open this year, so I think he's going to be up there, but it'd be interesting to see where he's going to finish. But he's been on a run. He leads the NL in ERA entering Wednesday. Tony Gonsolin did lead the league in ERA before he went on the injuries, but now he's not going to qualify in innings, so he's out. But it's funny, like all the – and then like I think Kershaw is down there too. Like you basically have – if you lower the innings requirement, I believe Gonsolin, Urias – Anderson and Kershaw are all in the top 10 in the National League at least. So, yeah, they've been insane. So it's been really good. But yeah, I don't know. I think you have to
pick somebody. Or
I think it's Freeman.
Yeah, because, that's what I was gonna say.
So you know he hasn't missed time.
The day after they clinched. So okay, what a slacker.
But Betts also missed time. So like it was in solidarity. So maybe look, you know what? Maybe Mookie is the MVP because he did that in solidarity with Freddie Freeman. No. But yeah, just the everyday consistency of it. Am I being a little biased because Freddie Freeman's closest comp as a player year by year is Eddie Murray? Maybe. But no, I don't know. Oh yeah. Last week too. Eddie Murray, I wrote about this, in 1990, led the major leagues in batting average, didn't win a batting title because Willie McGee got traded in August, already had enough at bats or plate appearances to qualify, was hitting .335 with the Cardinals. And then he sort of slumped with the A's. So his seasonal average was .324, but his NL average was .335. Eddie Murray at .330. Didn't win a batting title. I'm still salty about it. But anyway,
you don't bring it up at all either.
So. Never, ever. What I remember about that always is that Eddie Murray had 184 hits and 558 at bats. And about a week and a half ago, or maybe a week ago, Freeman had a 4-for-4 game and to get to 330. And I was like, oh, and he was getting close to the at bat. So he ended up going into the game. I forget which game it was last week. I think it was Friday. He needed to go 1-for-4 to be 184 for 558 on the season at that point. And he selfishly got 2 hits in this first 2 pass. So, but he was 185 for 558 at the time or during that game. So, yeah, I think it's Freeman. So at the moment, Freeman leads the majors in hits and doubles and batting average still. And he's like second to Goldschmidt, I believe, in WRC plus in the in the National League. So yeah, he's been really good. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's I was my heart again just because of how it central Mookie Betts played in some of those really really phenomenal streaks the Dodgers had. It's kind of where my heart was, but as I just looked more and more at the numbers before we record, and honestly during recording talking to you, I think it has to be Freddie.
Yeah. I think there's one person I didn't mention earlier, or just as an honorable mention or whatever. Justin Turner got off to a really slow start. He has a 130 WRC plus on the season now. he's been so good for 3 months, basically. He's hitting at 286. Now, obviously, batting average isn't end all be all, but he gets hits, right? Like, he's super reliable. So here's another thing. So I was looking at, these are the Dodgers top six offensive players by WAR are Freeman, Betts, Trey Turner, Will Smith, Gavin Lux, Justin Turner. Trey Turner has an 18% strikeout rate. Gavin Lux is 19.6. The others are like 16% and below. Like, that's crazy. Like, what is the league-wide strikeout rate? I'm looking that up as we speak. I think it's like 24 or something, or 22. I don't know what it is. I'm looking it up. I'm stalling.
You can keep saying numbers if you want.
Yeah, but like the point is they not that, you know, strikeouts can be fine if it comes with other stuff, but like they've been so good, like just at making contact and doing damage when they make contact. So the league-wide major league strikeout rate is 22.3. So like they're all pretty much well below that. And then, I mean, they obviously have some others like who aren't. Yeah, but like those people at the top, like, have been really setting the tone, and it sort of helped them through.
All right. You know what else Freddie Freeman does? Hits a lot of singles.
Well, see, here's the deal with this question. I thought of this question, and before I saw who the leader was, I assumed it was going to be a Trey Turner situation because he's been leading the league in singles most of the year. But Freddie Freeman has gotten so many hits lately, he passed Trey Turner in singles. So Trey Turner has 120 singles entering Wednesday. Freeman has 122. He leads the National League. The last full-season Dodger to lead the National League in singles was Juan Pierre in 2007. That is not my question to you. Like, that would be funny. Like, I tell you the answer, then I ask you what I just... No. So he had 164 that year. Two others in the last 15 years have led in singles while spending part of the year with the Dodgers. We'll talk about those in a bit. But my question to you, which two LA Dodgers have led the NL in singles more than once?
All right. I'll guess a name or two after this.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Which two Los Angeles Dodgers have led the league in singles hit more than once? I got that?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. I don't know.
All right. Here we go. Back to you.
I have one guess. I have one guess.
Yeah, let's do it.
Unfortunately appropriate guess due to his passing, but I will guess Maury Wills first.
He did it four times. 1961 he tied with Beta Pinson. And then he led solely in 62, 65, and 67. Oh, no, that's only three times because 67 was with the Pirates. So I was going to say, so besides these L.A. Dodgers who have done it more than once, I guess Juan Pierre is the only other one. There's the only other Dodgers to lead the league in singles are the two that I mentioned who did it playing for two different teams. Do you have any guesses on those? They're both in the last 15 years.
Did Trey do it last year?
Yes. Okay. He also led in hits. He led last year. The one that shocked me, Ryan Terrio in 2010.
What? 139
went from the Cubs to the Dodgers. And not only that, but guess who led the NL in hits in singles in 2008 and 2009? Ryan Terrio. So, like, here's the progression. Here's the singles leaders. So Pierre did it in 01 with Colorado, then Luis Castillo in 02. Then it's with the Marlins, Juan Pierre, Willie Tavares, Juan Pierre, Ryan Terrio. What a run. Pete Gordon did it twice with the Marlins right after he left the Dodgers. That was my way of stalling. I will say there were also in Brooklyn a bunch of one-timers. Zach Weed only did it once. But there were a couple of two-time singles leaders, Jake Daubert, who won the Dodgers' first MVP award in 1913. He was first baseman. And Wee Willie Keeler, 4 years running, or no, one, two, three, four, yeah, from 1897 to 1900, led the league in singles. So, yeah. Do you have an idea who the other person was?
Oh, sorry. I couldn't figure out if it was Juan Pierre or not. You were mystified.
Think along the same lines as you were with Maury Wills, I would say. That would be my...
But I'm going to draw a blank. So I'm going to tap out. I got one right. I'm happy.
Okay. What if I said...
No.
what if I said Grace Under Fire?
Nope. You're going to do this thing where, like, you give me hints and then it just makes my brain freeze up. It makes me even more embarrassed. I'm sticking to my guns.
Sure, are you sure you don't want to guess?
Oh, wait. Brett Butler.
Yep.
There he goes. Using Grace Under Fire. And I was like, what's the one hint you keep giving me and I keep forgetting who it refers to? some pitcher and what they eat or don't eat.
Oh man! Oh, that was that's Dan Heron and Fish.
Yeah. So fish. I thought this was like some quote, and you've mentioned it to me before, and I'm like, wait, no, comedian. I've caught up. All right, we're good.
Brett Butler led the National League in singles with the Giants in 1990. Then he signed with the Dodgers and did it three more years. So, yeah. Tony Gwynn led in singles. 3, 4, 6, 7 times.
I think the most interesting thing to me is you don't think of let's track the singles hitting leader as a stat. So you don't really think of someone as necessarily a singles hitter. You might think of them as, you know, sort of a slap hitter or whatever, but then usually they're bringing speed and stuff. So the fact that all of these players really do fit a mold is nice to see.
Well, the funny part, so, you know, Freeman is leading in singles too, so that's like weird.
Yes.
Or you would think it's weird. But then one of the co-leaders in the American League right now in singles, Jose Abreu. but you're right. Like, the only reason singles came on my radar was because at some point, like a month ago or maybe it was a few weeks ago, because Freeman leads the majors in doubles and Lux leads the majors in triples. And it was Trey Turner leading in singles. And at that point, I think Mookie Betts was like maybe 3 or 4 off the home run lead. And it obviously wouldn't be the majors, but it would be leading the league. So the Dodgers could have had 4 different people leading in 4 different types of hits. So that would have been neat.
Hey, Eric, guess what? It's
I
time
don't
for
know. Oh, okay.
With Jens and Greg. We love them.
4 and some change questions. 5 and some change questions from Craig. I can count. From Craig Manami, our friend and ticket provider for me.
That's right. an occasional co-host, and writer, longtime writer on the site. General mensch of a man, good guy.
Yeah, all around wonderful human, and also a good Twitter follower. Everyone follow Craig if you aren't already. How about that?
Yep.
You know, these first questions are always trivia questions to you, and I usually relish this. Usually, I'm really upset at the question you ask me. That was a good question. That was a right answerable for me. I could have got a Brett Butler without the hint, and I actually entered the 90s, and I was focused on Enfield era. I was focused on Maury Wills, and I thought of, you know, you ruled out Juan Pierre, so I was like, everyone else I don't think would have done it.
And I think you alluded to it, but I don't remember if you actually mentioned it. But we'll say that Maury Wills did die on Monday night, and the Dodgers are wearing a patch with him alongside the Vin Scully patch on their jerseys the rest of the season. He was 89, just wonderful career, a long time staple at Dodger Stadium, at spring training, Maury's pit. Like, he basically mentored Dave Roberts when he was a player, still longtime friend as a manager. Dave Roberts was visibly shaken on Tuesday about it. I will say, no, he wasn't shaken Tuesday. He teared up talking about him, but he had clearly processed it, and he was just I don't want to say they were happy tears, but it was more like acknowledgement of how much he meant to him, like as a mentor and friend. And you could totally see that coming through. Like, he had clearly, like, I think already passed the point of of accepting the death, I think. But he kept saying, you know, Maury's in a better place, all that kind of stuff. But no, he was very, it was very nice to hear sort of Dave Roberts talk about what he meant to him as a mentor. It was good.
Well noted, and an honor. We've got a question with that in mind. As we are in the middle of September, let's have some questions about September, October Dodger leaders per their batting and pitching splits. The late Dodger great Maury Wills is tied for second with 9 triples in 318 September/October games. Can Eric name the other 6 LA Dodgers with 7 or more triples in the late summer months?
Willie Davis.
With 13.
Let's go. Since you showed Grace Under Fire during your trivia, I will guess Brett Butler as well.
Not even on my list. So, and my list ends with 6 triples for what it's worth.
6 triples. Okay. Someone who played a lot. You know what? I'm gonna go for the longevity play first because it's in my head. But Bill Russell.
Bill Russell with 9.
Triples.
So you've got
Steve Sachs.
Steve Sachs with 7. You've got one more player with 7 and 2 players with 8.
One player with 7. All right. Oh man. Nope. Didn't play long enough. There's no way. I don't know why this is. Oh, Davey Lopes.
Davey Lopes with 8.
All right. Okay. Let's. What about, just because there were so many? I don't. This is a shot in the dark. Steve Garvey?
No.
All right. Matt Kemp.
Matt Kemp with 8. You're missing only one player with 7. I'm going to give you the years. 58 through 67.
Oh, God. Through 67?
Yep.
John Roseboro?
There you go.
Wow. All right.
Well done.
I would not have got that if you didn't.
Yeah, I felt kind of confident giving you the hint. All right. 7 LA Dodgers have hit 30 or more home runs in the last months of the regular season. Who were these bombers?
Okay, so Ronce.
With 43.
Eric Karras as a...
With 35. Number fourth on my list.
All right. What about going, let's see, did he go one, two, Garvey?
Garvey with 40.
Matt Kemp?
With 40.
I swear that's three more.
One, two, three more. Yep. You've gotten the top four.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Oof. Okay. So Mike Marshall.
No.
Okay. This is funny, and I will not tell you why until a different record, but I have a similar trivia question for you in a different for a Dodgers Rewind.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for the life of me, I can't, it's not like specifically this, but like there were names in it that should have come up that would help me right now that I can't remember who they were or what it was. So
not so smart without the cards, are you, Trebek?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Okay. So, Mike Piazza.
No, Piazza only had 27.
No wonder they traded him. So, Justin Turner?
No, Turner also 27. There's quite a list of the 27 hitters. Is quite a list for what it's worth.
Yeah, this is rough. I don't 30.
I'm going to give you one more guess.
All right.
One more incorrect guess. How about that?
Sure,
Neil, one, I'll let you keep going because I'm a nice guy.
What a mensch. Nope. It's not, why is it not coming to me? Strike year, so he's out. Sean Green?
Sean Green only had 25. You missed Pedro Guerrero, Corey Seager.
Oh, I didn't say Guerrero. Yeah.
And Willie Davis.
Wait.
Yep.
What?
Nope.
I talked myself out of Willie Davis, and when I guessed Mike Marshall, my first thought was Pedro Guerrero, and I thought, wait, 85 first, and I knew Marshall had a big September 85. That's what made me trigger that other question. So, yeah, I should have guessed Guerrero. That's my stupidity on that one. My bad.
All right, next up. Eight L.A. Dodgers have scored 122 more runs in September, October. Who are these home plate crossers?
All right. Willie Davis.
His name has come up a couple of times. Maybe you should go there again. 179.
Davey Lopes.
133, fifth on my list.
Harvey.
162, third on my list.
Let's go with the volume play here just because I'm stalling a little bit. Bill Russell.
124, just made, ooh, you know, just above the 122 player.
All right. Runs scored. Matt Kemp.
Matt Kemp with 136.
So he was a little bit short. No, you know, let's go Ethier.
Only 91.
All right, that was a tough one. Runs scored in September. So, okay. So, no wonder. Yep. Piazza was only 6 September, so he's not averaging 30 per. Pedro Guerrero.
With 102. Not quite.
And for some reason, I'm not good at math because I was thinking 177 in my head for for runs. But, like, anyway.
One last wrong guess.
Nah. All right. not bitter at all. Ron Say.
With 117. You missed. Eric Karros with 122. I forget. You might have said some of these names. My brain's melting here. Steve Sachs, 126. DB Loves, 133. I'm just going up from here. Fourth is Matt Kemp, who you said, 136. Steve Garvey, who you said, 162. Maury Wills with 175.
Oh, come on, Eric. What are you doing?
And Willie Davis with 179.
Wow. That's terrible.
We'll do a little twist here. Can Eric name the five LA Dodgers who had 130 to 156 strikeouts in September/October? Hint, these five pitchers ranked 16th to 20th on the list of top LA Dodger pitchers in these last months. I'm really confused.
What?
Yeah, I'm...
So that makes it. So Clayton Kershaw, right? He's at like, I don't know, 2,800 strikeouts. So he would have like, you know, almost 500 a month. So that makes sense, right? So we got to go. So in other words, we just have to scale it down to the 16th.
Yes. 20th. Okay. Okay. I'm caught up. Yeah. Okay. We're caught up. Yep.
Okay. So
I'm glad you figured it out. To clarify, number one is Don Sutton. Number two is Clayton with 519. Clayton Kershaw is 491. Craig, for some reason,
I guess not. I don't know. Did I anger past life Craig somehow?
Okay. I was like, wait, Clayton has way more than 156. I'm so confused.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah.
All right.
15 through 20.
So I'm going to go
16 through 20. Excuse me. Don't you dare give me number 15.
I have a sneaking suspicion this person is actually higher on the list, but I will say Kenley Jansen. To start.
Yeah. I'm Kenley has 201.
Yeah.
All right. God, way too good.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, okay. So I wonder if I think in what? Jonathan Broxton.
No. Not in the top 20.
Liar. Okay. So. Seven. 2006 to 12. Chad Billingsley.
Chad Billingsley is number 17 on this list with 154.
Okay. So this is where I got to get my mindset in, the sort of the Billingsley frame. Okay. So
I'm going to give you a very small hint. I'm going to give you the innings pitched of these pitchers for September and October.
Okay. All right.
234, 149. 180, 119. For reference, Chad Billingsley has 158.
I don't think that helped. But, okay. No, I mean, it's something. I'm not eschewing it. I'm just...
I wanted to maybe get you out of, say, like, Zach Greinke flash in the pan, you know.
Oh, right. I thought about it. It was like only 3 years. He didn't strike out 900 or 800. So what about Tommy John?
Not in the top 20.
I know he didn't strike out a ton, but I was thinking. Too many. Bob Welch.
Bob Welch is number 6 on this list with 58.
Too high. The other person. I think I was thinking of guessing. It's going to be too high. Strike shortened years, 90 to 98. He has too many strikeouts. I'm talking myself out of Ramon Martinez, so I'm not guessing him. So the utility infielder. No. Derek Lowe.
Nope. I'm going to give you one more. Not in the top 20, by the way.
Kevin Brown.
Kevin Brown is on the list with 136.
Oh God. Okay. Oh, okay. So in this vein, Chan Ho Park.
No, Chan Ho is number 9 on this list, actually, with 49. Excuse me, that's games. 205 strikeouts. You missed Bill Senior, Ismael Valdez, and
I almost said Ismael Valdez,
and Walker Buehler.
Mm.
That was fun.
Yeah, no, it was not easy. I'm glad I got two.
Yeah. All right. Moving right along. Dodger owners Todd Boehly and Mark Walter led a group that bought Chelsea, an English football club, back in July. It is interesting to listen to the commentary from the UK as they try to glean from their Dodger experience how they might run Chelsea. There could be a comparison as the same basic group that owns the Red Sox also own Liverpool. What are your thoughts, if any, on their involvement in the biggest sport in the UK?
I have almost no thoughts. I know it happened. I'm not feeling it. I don't follow soccer really. So I don't really, I know nothing about those teams mm-hmm. in the Premier League. And, so I just don't know. I will say, like, Boehly is pretty clearly the point guy for that ownership group. I know Walter's a part of the group or whatever, but I don't think, for instance, that them owning Chelsea is going to be like, you know, like, oh, they're diverting way too much attention to Chelsea. They have to pay attention to, I don't think it's that at all, right? They're it's not like they're Artie Moreno, like, hands-on, like, meddling owners or whatever.
It comes up a lot. I know. So I follow Premier League more than you, but that, you know, not by much, I would say.
Yeah.
I really enjoy watching it, but I do find following it a little difficult just because of how different it can be from American sports. But I do love watching it, and I am ostensibly a Liverpool fan. I sort of ran through a long time ago, more than a decade ago, you know, trying to pick my team, so to speak. And it's mostly because their song is "You'll Never Walk Alone," which Johnny Cash has a wonderful version of. So for no particular reason was what made me pick them. Had I been picking a team now, maybe go, oh, you know, not that I root for owners, but they've been good so far. And it's a similar Dodger, you know, similar blue, you know, I have no other reason. I have no ties to any particular part of England, so might as well. But because of that, I am loosely aware of commentary of the Fenway Sports Group that owns both the Red Sox and Liverpool, and a lot of times, like, you know, they traded Mookie so they could pay Salah, kind of thing. Right. So I don't think that's going to happen with this group. I think they have enough gobs and gobs of money to devote to both. But, you know, now and then, mate, you might see some funny jokes here and there with that.
Just wait till the Dodgers don't sign Trey Turner this offseason, and then all of a sudden, oh, I see. Chelsea's your number one priority. But,
there are 2 weeks left in the regular season. I almost did my old joke of true or false trivia question, but name something or someone not involving the Dodgers in any way that you'll be watching in baseball for the rest of the regular season. I mean, there's two very obvious names in Aaron Judge and Albert Pujols. I don't know if you've heard, Eric. But they're chasing a couple of important key milestones.
As we record this, Aaron Judge is sitting on 60 home runs, which is an absurd total, right? 60 is a lot. And Albert Pujols has 698 career home runs. So a decent chance, at least a chance, that Pujols could hit 700 at Dodger Stadium this weekend. That was another notable thing about the Sunday broadcast, Dodgers-Giants on ESPN. Hanser Alberto was interviewed in one of the innings, and they even had him do, like, play-by-play in Spanish for a little bit. He was very engaging. It was fun. he did say they brought up to him, Carl Ravitch asked him about, man, you've been on the mound 7 times, and like within a nanosecond, Alberto's like, 8, man, 8. He's like, 8. Then he said the one he wants to pitch, he does want to pitch to Pujols so he can give up 700. I thought that was really funny. But yeah, so who knows? But no, those for sure. Other than that, it's like I bounce around on, you know, other games, but it's sort of watching the wild card sort of race. It seems like the American League is sort of paring down, and that, like, really the Brewers are like, they have to sort of show if they have any fight. Otherwise, the NL is basically just a battle of seeding at that point between mm-hmm. the Padres and Phillies. And so, yeah, I don't know.
And then, the NL East getting to figure out who gets the bye and who gets bit.
Oh, right. Exactly. And also, this is Dodgers related. But I will be watching intently if Freddie Freeman leads the league in batting. It leads the either league or majors in batting average, so I can
and singles.
Harp about Eddie Murray. Yeah. Oh, and singles and doubles. But I also would like to see Freddie Freeman hit 50 doubles because I have never, you know, I was sort of jokingly said a couple weeks ago, I've been waiting for a 50 double Dodger season my whole life, and I haven't seen one. So it'd be nice to see one. But yeah.
Of the two, it's been fun watching the Judge chase, but got to be Pujols. Just like,
yeah,
I remember, like, if he has a miracle season, he can hit 700, but it's not going to happen. And the fact that he's just knocking at the door, the fact that it could be a Dodger Stadium. Max Muncy was quoted on Sportsnet LA saying, no one wants to give up a home run, and no one wants a home run hit on their team, but we are all kind of hoping he does it here.
Yeah.
Here at Dodger Stadium. And obviously, I know St. Louis fans are hoping it happens there, but it would be really, really cool to just see, you know, a fan base that is frequently hostile to former players. And I do not think that's going to be the case here. Actually, having a warm welcome to a player on another team would be really cool to see.
I will be in attendance Friday and Saturday. So, like, look, if he's going to do it then, sure, great. But I do think it would be better just generally if Pujols gets 700 in St. Louis. That would be But also, I'm not going to shy away from the chance to see someone hit their 700th home run. That would be amazing. So, yeah.
Do either of you play Wordle? And if you do, do you use the same start word or do you change it up? Was it about word games, crossword? What is it about word games, crosswords that makes you come back for more?
I think it is exercising a different part of the brain that just keeps you at least sort of active mentally, but also sort of as a distraction for whatever you should be doing, or like you know, or like just a way to sort of wind down in a way.
Well, so you know, that's really interesting that we mentioned a few weeks ago, you and I got back into the New York Times crossword around the same time for no unrelated, like you and I just happened to pick it both back up. So we will frequently text each other our frustrations or our triumphs. And that's how I used to only be able to do even close Monday, Tuesday, and now and then Wednesday and Thursday on, we're just hopeless. And at that point, I'm like, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I will do this nice little quick diversion way to wind down. And it was nice. And Wordle fits the same camp. And Taser, by the way, is my start word. And it's going to be my start word until it's the word of the day. And then I'll swap out it because I want that one. I want that one. I want to hit it. And then, you know, if I change it up and it's Taser, I'm just going to be beside myself and not touch Wordle again. So it's got to be Taser.
Yeah, and I was with you. I was very bad at it, and like same thing with Monday or Tuesday. I would you know, solve it without checking or whatever, and then I just slowly got better. And like recently, like we've both been doing it where we could get like Sundays and do like that.
And I've gotten a few Saturdays, like not this past Saturday, but what I was gonna say is I think you have less patience than I do, and I will like work on it and like leave the app running and like go do some chores and come back and kind of take a look. And now I've gotten to the point where specifically Fridays and Saturdays, I will let them torture me for 3 hours. And I'm not on for 3 hours, but I'm like doing other things while thinking about what going is this back to it, stupid going back cross. To it, but yeah, it is definitely a brain exercise. And I you didn't say this, but I'll say this for you. There has to be a big reason you do this is there are a good amount of Eric level puns in the crossword.
Yeah, I think that's true. And then I guess you could say like, look, I'm just a big fan of Oreos and Terry Polo and various
your ode to Oreos.
That's right. Yeah, like some of the words they use over. All right, I get it. This is a good.
Ovid has appeared in the New York Times crossword puzzle 3 days in a row now. I'm excited to see if it's makes it to four.
So and back to Wordle. So this the crosswords sort of took my Wordle obsession going. I did Wordle for a while. I was a late comer to it when it first came out, but then I was doing it like every day, and then I started doing Dwordle and Quartle, and then Octortle, which is eight at a time. And then there's Setaquartle, which was 16 at a time. And I found a 32 at a time Duo Trigordle. So I got to the point where I would wake up in the morning if I wasn't awake past midnight. And I would do all of those. And I'd and it got to be too much. I'm like, what am I doing? So I stopped. I decided to stop, and I haven't really done it. I've gone back occasionally and done Wordle only because it is actually in the app now.
The crossword app.
The crossword app. So or the games app, I guess. And
I think it's just called Crossword, isn't it?
I thought it was New York Times Games, but maybe I don't know.
Mine is just called Crossword. Maybe they have two out there. I don't know.
Yeah. So, but what I do now is besides the crossword is I will do old crosswords in the app, like just so going back and just as a practice. But like I also do Spelling Bee on the New York Times. And that is a fun diversion. And the funniest part was I was doing it for months before I realized what the hints page was, which tells you how many words there are of each letter. I thought it was like basically, okay, I'm giving up. I need to get hints for these. And so I never clicked on it because I didn't want it to like invalidate the game. I didn't know I never bothered to check what the actual like rules were. So I would go in blind. So there were times I didn't get Queen Bee for a long, long time. And this is before I ever clicked on today's hints. And I finally got it one time, but I was like, how do I know how many words there are? I'm like, I'm just going to keep guessing into the abyss until I'm done. And so that got a little much. So now I basically go until I get to genius. And then if I feel like I'm close enough, I will try to get all of them to get Queen Bee status. But that happens, I don't know, maybe once a week. Those are my two sort of diversions now. But I will say when I was playing for Wordle, I switched it up. For a while, it was because you can either do rates or tiers. It's all the same letters, right? You're just switching it up. But like those were sort of a go-to. But then when I was doing the multi Wordle games, I had two different combos to start the first two. And it was irate and then sound or sometimes pound. Actually, I would prefer pound. Because usually the S's are easier to spot. Like you can tell like perhaps where an S might go rather than a P. So at least the P it like reveals more of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then I sort of changed it up a little bit and I would do adieu and sport for the first two. And that got all the vowels out except Y. And it really like just sort of set the tone.
It should be noted that I do play on hard mode, so there's none of these two word combo cheating plans.
No, I'm talking about like Duo Trigordle or whatever.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't do it on Wordle. Like I just pick one and then just go where it takes me. Like yeah. But I'll switch it up on Wordle. Like if I play like, because I have the sort of part of my brain, like it's like the, I think the lottery's a good idea. You should play it. Like that's in my head. So I'm like, no, I'm going to guess today's word on one. Like you know, like.
I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm just picking the same word over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Today's right. The day. All right. When I was in high, this is I'm quoting Craig here. When I was in high school, there was a pizza restaurant in West LA that made a pan pizza with cheese and jalapenos. It was both hot from the chili and the temperature of the pizza, but it was also good. For a proteinless pizza, name your ingredients and crust style. Thanks and have a good week.
Oh boy. So I was thinking about this. I guess in this situation, like, are mushrooms a protein? They have protein in them, but no, probably not, right?
I'm gonna let you go with it.
Yeah, because so I would say, mushrooms and jalapenos for sure, sort of underrated sometimes on a pizza, even though there's tomato sauce. Although at times there could be pesto sauce or whatever, but I generally prefer the standard. Like, I guess it depends on the pizza, but I would add some tomatoes on the pizza. Like, mm-hmm. That's good. If I have jalapeno peppers, it's less of a need for bell peppers, but I like bell peppers on pizza still. Roasted garlic is really good on a pizza. I'm trying to think. Like, I don't like olives, so I know that's like a pretty standard like pizza thing. I guess you could. Oh man, just to anger the anti pineapple folks, Hawaiian pizza with no ham, it's just pineapple. No, that'd be amazing. I'm pretty okay with most things on pizza. So like I would try that. But I think mushrooms, jalapenos for sure, and then just mix and match with other stuff.
With what crust you going with?
Oh, pretty standard, I guess. Like just normal. Like unless I'm ordering at like a chain place. I tend not to, sometimes it's like, so Domino's, I don't like their thin crust because it's literally like a cracker.
Yeah.
And it's not like a real pizza to me. Like, whereas I like the thin crust at Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
But so if I'm Domino's, if I do like an alternate crust, I'd rather do the pan there than that. But I think I would just go the, like a normal, just a standard crust. You know,
as close to sort of New York style as you can get. Yeah. So at Pizza Hut, that would be the thin crust. Not that that's New York style. Please, New Yorkers, don't come after me. Domino's has a Brooklyn style. And then obviously if you're at either in New York or at a New York style pizzeria, that would be my crust pick.
I've had the Brooklyn style and I do like that. That's a good like consistency. So I'm with you there. That's pretty good. You know what is weird? I know Joe Davis was hyping it up on a recent podcast. But Detroit style pizza, it's
a Little pan, Caesars,
right? Yeah, right. I've had it and like, it's a good pizza. It that has like, you know, it's just pan, right? In a different dish, because of the edges, it has a little bit more crustiness.
Yeah.
On the sides,
it's got that kind of caramelization thing going on.
Yeah, which is a plus. So yeah, that's pretty good too. So
Detroit people, don't attack me. I know I've also been to Buddy's in Detroit and had pizza there. So it's not, I don't think it's just Little Caesars, but for our LA based listeners, that might be the most familiar analog they've heard of.
I know there's a Detroit spot in LA and I don't remember the name of it right now, but that's an actual it might be like a relative chain, but not, it's not like chain level of Little Caesars, but yeah.
And I've jalapenos for sure has become my go-to. If I have to pick one topping, give me some jalapenos. I'm fine with bell peppers on a pizza. I ain't gonna pick them off either, fine, but I do find sometimes they can be a little overcooked and then of all places, Pizza Hut used to have these. I don't know if they were like Pepadew peppers, but they were like spicy and sweet at the same time. And those were incredible when they had them.
Is it just banana peppers?
No, it was not banana. They were red, and a very, very specific taste, that was really, really incredible, but not around anymore. But, you know, a better pizza place than Pizza Hut, sure, I'm sure. If they have something like that, I might go for it. And then I said jalapenos, but, man, onions are actually probably my number one. And then
– really?
Yeah. If I did, like, in order, go onions and then jalapenos and then some kind of protein, pepperoni
or
chicken. I like
onions generally. I've never really gotten it on a pizza.
Oh, I love it.
But it makes sense, right? Like, but I think part of it, like, I kind of like, I would say I like the crunch, but I think mushrooms might be my favorite non-meat topping. And they don't have a crunch. So, like, it can totally blend in there.
The earthiness of the mushroom doesn't gel with me, except for some reason, chicken and mushroom. No, chicken. Yeah. For some reason, that really it fits with me. The other thing I would say is, if I have the option to, I am requesting double sauce on the pizza.
Mm.
Big fan.
You just thinking of the chicken and mushroom. Mm-hmm. I might consider doing a pesto sauce on that.
I just love pizza red sauce marinara too much to do that. But I respect your choice. I get it.
Well, so there's, I guess, occasionally going to like Blaze or any of the places that where you can like, you know, make your own pizza or whatever, just to change it up every once in a while. Like, I will get a pesto there, and it's good. But it's like, yeah, I same thing. I'm pretty much red all the way. I don't know if I do like the double sauce. That said, specifically on the Little Caesars Detroit style, and I think this is a feature of regular Detroit style just generally, but they do put like sauce. Like on the top of the pizza too, like a little bit, I think, just to have extra sauce. So, and then that's good. So like, I'm not against it. It's just not something I usually do. Once again.
Yeah.
Craig has made us hungry. Good Lord. All right.
Well I'm going to not eat pizza because it's not a cheat day, but I'm going to dream about eating pizza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's everyone. I hope you're hungry. I hope you go out and have a pizza while you somehow listen to this again. I don't know why we're saying to listen to the podcast again at the end of the show, but thanks for listening for however much you did listen to. And we'll talk to you again next week, hopefully with bellies full of pizza.